There's something about the whole experience of flying that tends to get people worked up. They get in a state. Some travellers get nervous when they fly, some get apprehensive, and some get angry. Really, really angry. That's why we have air rage. It's a thing, it's a phenomenon common enough to have its own name. It's this unreasonable anger that only seems to strike people when they're travelling on planes. People get mad in the air, they get steamed up over seats being reclined and armrests being hogged and hosties not plying them with the right amount of alcohol. Why is everyone so angry? What is there to really be upset about? Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. Today we're talking about air rage, this tendency for people to get mad on planes, far madder than they normally would, sometimes for the most ridiculous reasons. We're going to find out what causes it, and we're going to find out how the airlines handle it. We're also going to talk about how you can deal with your own frustrations when you're in the air. Joining me today to discuss this, I have two traveller.com.au writers who generally try to keep the aggression to a minimum. First up, she's been a travel writer for more than a decade and says that if she was running the aviation industry, it would be very much like a kindergarten, Uta Yonker.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Uta. And also, in for a chat today, we have a man who has been penning stories on travel since 1982 and is known around the traveller offices as the tripologist, Michael Gabicki.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Michael. Thanks very much for joining me today, guys. Now, Michael, let's start with you. What's everyone so angry about?
Well, look, I mean, where do you start? The trip into the airport, you know, you're probably in unfamiliar traffic. This is my trip to the airport, okay? There's going to be roadworks on the way. You can count on that 100%.
Yeah.
Yep. So you're going to be stuck in them. You're going to be looking at your watch, thinking, am I going to make it? So then, you know, because you've carefully budgeted your time, you get to the airport, okay, and then you haven't got the gold coin for the ridiculous luggage cart, so you have to drag your luggage to the check-in desk, and then you're standing in a queue. You finally get checked in. You've got God knows what kind of a seat, and then you go through the immigration controls, and then the security check where you get a full body scan.
Yeah,
this happens to me every time. There's nothing more irritating. Stand up, hands in the air, and this thing goes around you, and you know. And meanwhile, there's a guy next to you with neck tats who just waltzes straight through. You know, I mean, how does this happen? and then okay, you know, you're overcharged for a coffee. You pay $4.50 for a ridiculously bad cup of coffee. You finally get to the plane, and you've got a middle seat, in the middle of the aisle. So you've got people on either side of you, and you're there. It's a full plane, completely full. You can't move anywhere else. And you're there for the next, 8, 10, maybe 12, 14 hours if you're really unlucky. Mm-hmm. You have every right to be angry.
Is that what it is, Uta? Is it pent-up frustration?
I think I agree that it's pent-up frustration, but I think there's a couple of other trigger points as well. Mm-hmm. And this may just be me. But people prepare. You're going to an airport. You're standing in line for the security scan for 20 minutes. Take your belt off. Take your phone out of your pocket. Take your coins out of your pocket. None of this is a surprise. It's like people just switch off. So there's, and this gets me slightly riled. Okay.
There you go. You're not even on the plane yet.
I don't have to be in the air to get rage. But I think one of the other big things about it is proximity. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, basically we're animals and we're used to a certain distance. You know how when you step into an elevator and people step out and everyone automatically rearranges? We have this instinctive distance we're comfortable with, and it is not economy class seating.
Right.
And just that, even beyond the fact of not being able to move and getting crappy food and everything, I think it's just this sense that you don't have the space you need ratchets up the discomfort factor a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, let me pick up on that because... So legroom has shrunk in a lot of airlines, especially low-cost carriers, okay? Mm-hmm. It's now 29 inches. It used to be about 32, 33. Don't know what that is in centimetres, sorry. But okay, so when I sit in a seat with a 29-inch pitch, I've got an inch between the front of my legs, front of my knees, and the seat in front, okay? So when they recline that seat, that goes down to zero pretty quickly, you know? Yep. And, yeah, it's just, it's another really annoying fact of flying.
And well, can I tell you, right. I actually learnt something through this whole pitch debate. I have abnormally long thighs.
Right.
So
there you go.
I'm tall. I'm not as tall as Michael, but I am a tall girl. But apparently most people have shorter thighs and longer calves. Okay. This is good if you are doing a lot of flying.
Be great.
Because it's the length of your thighs that backs you up into that seat, and I always, always, always have my knees in people's seat, and then when they put it back, it gets ugly quickly.
Now, when you say it gets ugly, you don't sort of jump up and punch them in the face, do you?
I mean,
this is what we're
talking
about. Is that
a question? I don't.
I mean, I think we need to look at a distinction between air frustration and air rage, because air rage is when it boils over and people are getting violent and
oh, no, I'm a well-brought-up girl. I have not used physical violence up to this point.
I don't doubt that, yeah. To me, I think one of the things is that there's this complete powerlessness to the air travel experience. You're constantly at somebody else's mercy. When you go to check in, you're at the mercy of the airline and how many people they've decided to put on and how long you're going to have to wait. When you go through security, you're at their mercy, and if they decide to drag you off and search you in a little room, then that's something you have to do. When you get on the plane, if they decide not to let you on, you can't come on. Once you get on board, when they tell you to sit down and put on your seatbelt, you have to put it down and put on your seatbelt. There is nothing that you can do to change any of these things, and I think that sense of powerlessness really builds up in people, and it boils over in these air rage incidents.
Yep, quite right. Window shade, you know, you're told to put that up, put that down.
Right.
You know, you don't have any control over it. I mean, it's simple. If you want to look out the window, no, that's not on.
You're listening to Flight of Fancy. If you're enjoying the podcast, you can find stories by our guests and other great writers at traveller.com.au. One thing I found very interesting in researching for this episode is that apparently there are more air rage incidents on planes that have different sections to them. So not just economy. So the budget carriers actually don't have as many air rage incidents because they only have economy seat where everyone is squeezed into these tiny spaces. But when you have to walk through business class first and you look at what all the business class people are getting and then you end up in your tiny little space, that tends to make people more frustrated and angry.
That's a really interesting fact. And the other interesting thing is that air rage is not confined to people who are just sitting in economy. I mean, a couple of years ago, you remember this case where they had nut rage? There was this Korean. She was the vice president of Korean Airlines, and she got served nut. She was sitting in first class. Her father is the CEO and chairman of Korean Airlines. Her nuts were served macadamia nuts were served in a packet, right? And she was really annoyed that they weren't served on a plate, as she thought they should be. Now, this is airline. This is apparently the airline protocol. They're supposed to serve them, even to first-class passengers, in a packet, not on a plate.
Right.
But she was so annoyed. She was incandescent with rage. She called out the head steward. She berated him in front of everybody, and then she hit him.
Wow.
And then she ordered the captain to turn the plane around. Yeah, this is New York. This is, Kennedy Airport. Turn the plane around, go back to the terminal, and offload this guy, which happened. And I mean,
wow.
Initially they hushed it up, but then she started to spread rumors about this guy that he was having an illicit affair with someone, and so he got really annoyed and he dragged her into court. Okay, so she was then in deep trouble because this was seen to be exceedingly bad PR for the airline. Mm. She ended up getting a 1-year sentence, which was commuted. She spent four months in jail anyway. And,
wow.
And she was forced into a major apology, total loss of face for her and her father, which in Korea is a very big thing.
But police do get involved in these incidents, don't they?
They can. They sure can.
People are forcibly ejected from planes, arrested.
Yeah, well, we've seen an example of, with the United incident, it's a different case, but they can do it.
Well, what I find interesting is I was once on a plane where when we landed, we had to wait because someone was arrested for smoking in the plane.
Right.
And you just go,
what were you doing?
There are announcements. Like, you know this? There are announcements about it. And there had even been an announcement during the flight that basically said, we know someone's smoking in the toilet. Don't do it again. You will be arrested. And
right.
They clearly did it again because they were arrested. I just go, do some people, it's the people who have the coins and the phones in the pocket. They have left their brains at home and they are doing stupid things.
Well, they don't care. Udra, have you witnessed any air rage incidents?
No, I've restrained myself when I've wanted to.
But have you seen anybody else on a plane?
I have had friends who, I had a friend who was also traveling in first class, interestingly, and the way she described it to me, it was total mystery where there was, there was someone who was a member of a royal family of a particular country and they had basically booked out all of first class except my friend's seat. And their children were running around and being a nightmare. And my friend said something to the staff, and the staff were like, "Royal family can't do a thing." And she just sucked it up. But then one of the children had a tantrum, and the mother turned around and went, "You don't touch my child." And she was going, "I didn't touch your child," and like basically got screamed at and harangued.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, this is probably a weird overreaction to something Whoa. Totally unrelated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's child rage.
Combine that with an airplane.
What about you, Ben? Have you seen anything?
I was sort of involved in one in a way.
You were a perpetrator.
Not my own yeah. rage. No, I was on a flight, an overnight flight from the Gold Coast up to Osaka, traveling with my girlfriend. And it was a budget flight on a Jetstar plane. And it got to, you know, about 10 o'clock at night, and we wanted to go to sleep. So my girlfriend reclined her seat, and the guy behind her basically punched the back of her seat and said, "You have to put your seat back up." And she said, "Well, no, I'm not doing that." And he said, "Well, you're squashing my knees, so you have to." And she said, "Well, that's, you know, it's a budget airplane, and we're flying overnight, and I need to sleep, so that's not the thing that I'm going to do." And it got into this guy got extremely angry and kept kicking her seat really violently. And so my girlfriend got up and went and spoke to the staff and said, you know, "This is what's happening." And they came and had a word to him and said, "You know, you can't do this. They have a right to recline their seats." And he called her some fairly bad words Wow. that I can't use on this podcast, but they have four letters and they begin with C. He sort of calmed down after a while, but basically every half hour or so for the entire flight, every half hour or so, he would kick or punch the back of her seat to make sure that she wasn't sleeping properly.
Mm. But this is part of the phenomenon is that there is no escalation. People launch right in
yeah.
with attacks. And it's so often you have the thing. I was once traveling on an American airline who has very little legroom. And it wasn't a long flight.
So, an American airline.
Exactly. And it wasn't a long flight. And the person in front of me reclined their seat back straight away. I always get the person who reclines their seat back straight away. And I was like going, "It's 3 hours. You can live with this. Let it go. Let it go. Let it go." And I chanted this to myself for 2 hours and 50 minutes. And then 5 minutes after the point at which the captain had said, "Seat back's upright," I sort of went, right. And I couldn't even fill in my immigration form because, like, that's literally how little room I had. And I finally tapped her on the shoulder and said, "Excuse me, would you mind putting your seat back upright so I can fill in my immigration form?" And she was like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Of course I will."
Right.
So,
yeah.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about seat reclining, Michael? Because this is a source of a lot of air rages.
Difficult. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Look, if it's a short flight, if it's a domestic flight, I won't recline. And most people don't, especially on those commuter flights, you know, Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane. Nobody reclines, as far as I can tell.
Except the people sitting in front of me.
Except on the UTA flights, which we all know about. Yeah, you should never recline during meal times. If the person in front of you is reclined during a meal time, I have no hesitation in calling attention to that and getting them moved upright.
Should you politely tell people that you're about to recline your seat? Because I've heard some people say that you should, and I don't do that.
I've done it from time to time, and people always look bewildered. I turn around and make this sort of lying down motion. I don't know. There should be some sort of a hand signal, shouldn't there? We should invent that. Make this kind of lying down motion.
Or a little button that puts a red light on.
Yeah. And fold up your laptop because it's about to be squished into your chest.
What the hell? So I do it most of the time, not always, but I try and be polite. If you're in the middle seat, that's hard because you're going to stand up and hello.
Yeah.
But
here's the simple rule I propose. Okay. I agree with you. Domestic flights, no. Just no. And if the airlines would just put in seats that don't recline, we would all be a lot happier. International flights, my rule would be no reclining until after the meal. Because it's going to be an hour and a half maximum. Mm. There is nothing you need to do in that time. You're not going to go to sleep. You know, just keep it upright, let everyone have breathing space, and then afterwards we get into the point that some people may want to sleep or whatever, and you can have various arguments. But give people 90 minutes of peace.
Yeah.
But what about if it's one of those flights that's departing like midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning? You're really tired. All you want to do is sleep.
Okay.
You want to skip a meal. You don't care about that.
Yeah, but it's got to come back upright for the meal anyway.
I do see
that as a special circumstance, but it's got to come back upright for the meal.
I agree.
I have been in that situation where I haven't wanted to eat and it is 3 a.m, and you just suck it up, and the second that meal is cleared, my seat goes back.
Flight of Fancy is brought to you by Intrepid Travel. As the global leaders in small group travel, Intrepid knows a thing or two about logistics. Their local leaders are not only travel experts, but teachers, gurus, and enthusiastic purveyors of unforgettable grassroots adventures. They'll get you safely from one destination to the next, show you hidden gems only locals know, and organise everything you need to have the best experience ever. Most of all, they'll give you peace of mind, so you can spend less time looking at bus schedules and more time soaking up the world around you. Find your next trip at intrepidtravel.com. Now, there was a few years ago, an American guy invented something called the Knee Defender, which is basically a contraption that you fit onto the seat and pushes onto the seat in front of you, preventing the person from reclining.
Great idea.
To me, that's just so incredibly obnoxious. What do you think, Michael?
The airlines had a number of incidents surrounding knee defenders. There was one flight that was going across America, and it got so violent between a man and a woman that she threw a glass of water over him. He was the one who had the knee defenders inserted, so she couldn't recline. She threw a glass of water over him. There was a big fight. The captain decided to land in Chicago and kick them both off. But the funny thing was, they were seated in premium economy. Reclining should not, given that that's got more legroom, reclining in that instance shouldn't have been such a big deal, really. I wouldn't have thought.
You know what I think it is? And this relates back to your point earlier that the majority of incidents don't happen on budget airlines. Where it's about expectations. If you have bought a budget airline ticket, you know the seat's crap, you know the food's crap, you're just going to suck it up and get there, and that's fine. If you've paid money for premium economy and you're not getting to recline your seat in the way that you've been looking forward to doing it, or, you know, if you're in first and those nuts are not on a plane, this is just a step too far.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Look, she had every right to recline her seat, you know, I think. I don't see why he was bothering to put in a knee defender to stop her from doing it.
How would you guys deal personally if you could see that an air rage incident was brewing on a flight that you were on, or you know, something that possibly involved
pretend
you?
Sleep.
If it's you trying to recline your seat and then someone's using a knee defender or someone's doing something obnoxious near you, how do you deal with these things? Do you go to the stewards and do you tell them?
I'm calling the staff. They are paid to deal with this.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is one of my beefs, and I get that I think being cabin attendants, that's a horrible job. You could not pay me to do it. But they have chosen to do it. And I understand that managing different passenger expectations is really difficult, but I think there need to be, it's me being German again, there need to be some clearer rules.
That's one of the things. There are no rules, really, are there? You can recline your seat, but there's no one actually saying, don't do it now, do it now, unless you're taking off and landing.
Exactly. But... and if that's the thing. If there was some clarity around what is acceptable, you would have fewer problems. Anyway, that's why I would call the staff and go sort this out.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't try and do it yourself.
Oh, God, no.
No,
That does seem to be when things really escalate, doesn't it? When two passengers start going at it.
Yeah, yeah. And like you say, it escalates. There is no ramp up. It's just all of a sudden it's on. It's so violent and it happens so fast.
And it's also, there are people who don't seem to realise that they are not in their own living room and different standards of behaviour are called for. The closest I ever personally came to air rage, and it got to the point where I actually said, I raised it once and then I couldn't say anything about it anymore because I was so livid I knew I would overreact. Again, seat, not a lot of legroom, person in front of me, reclined seat straight away, and she was short. You know, she didn't need the legroom, but... okay, that's still within the bounds of permissible. But what she would do, she was up and down a lot, which again is not illegal, but she wouldn't just sit down in her seat. Like from two rows back, she'd take a running leap and throw herself into the seat. So it would bang against me with her full body weight. And it was like, okay, that's peculiar behavior. If you want to do that on your own sofa, you are entitled to do that. But this is not normal behavior for an aeroplane.
Sounds fun, though.
Oh, Ben, I'm not traveling with you, mate.
Now, I have my own fairly niche source of air rage, I have to say. This is not something that happens too often, but... baggage carousels.
I'm with you.
People who crowd the baggage carousels. When if everyone just took a step back or two steps back, it would be so easy to just get in there and pick up your bag and take it away. Absolutely. But everyone has to crowd in there.
Yeah. And I bet you experience exactly the same thing I do. That is, you try and lead by example and you step back several steps and other people just push in front of you.
Of course they do. They put their baggage carts in front of you and you're blocked in.
People have to get their baggage cart right banging up against so they don't have to carry their bag.
But a lot of countries have, well, Thailand, for example, they have a line painted on the floor, mm-hmm. which is like a meter and a half, 2 meters away from the baggage carousel. Perfect. And nobody transgresses. It's
wonderful. The Spanish
wonderful.
Have it too, but everyone ignores it.
Yeah, pretty much every country I've ever seen, no one actually pays any attention to those lines.
Really?
Except Japan.
Ah, Japan, yes. Wonderful. Yeah. Which Germany? Then. They do it in Germany?
I don't think... Well, they don't need to in Germany. Well, of course. Everyone understands.
But I guess the plus side of that is you feel this frustration at all of your fellow passengers, but there is light very clearly at the end of the tunnel at that point where you're about to grab your bag and walk out of there and never see these people ever again. So maybe that's why there aren't more air rage incidents at the carousel involving me.
You're just relieved that you've got a little bit of space around you and the flight is over. You know, that's a feeling of great relief. I've got a personal hate, which is... The person behind you who can't get out of their seat without grabbing the back of your seat and levering themselves up.
That is
and
a good point.
And they're pretty big, usually. They're always big because they haven't got enough core strength to be able to put their hands down on their armrests and lever themselves up the way most normal people can.
Well, I think they do.
Big. But... Oh, my God. So they just grab the back of your seat. And, you know, if you're sleeping or something, it's just like, you're on the fairground ride.
Yes.
It's hellish.
It is.
It really is. It's one of those little things. It only lasts a couple of seconds, but it's so annoying. Oh, yeah. I can punch him in the face.
And the thing about it is, if it happens at the start of a long haul flight, and you know that's going to keep happening.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things I found interesting is that alcohol doesn't actually play that big a part in air rage incidents. I was reading a statistic that was saying there's only 23% of air rage incidents are alcohol related. And to me, I just thought it was a bunch of drunken buffoons getting into fights, but apparently it's not. And there's talk in the UK of banning alcohol in airports as a way of stopping this, because there's been a huge increase in air rage incidents there. But it seems to me that's not actually going to do anything.
Okay, at the risk of sounding like a rule lover, which I am, hell, who am I trying to kid? It's because there's rules about alcohol, I reckon, because everyone knows that the staff can cut you off, mm-hmm. right? So people are not getting that drunk.
Yeah.
No one knows that the staff can make you put your seat back up.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
That's my theory. People stay within...
They're willing to accept that as a thing that happens.
I think so.
When they get cut off. I feel like if people couldn't drink at the airport, they'd all just drink as much as possible before they got there.
Do you see so many sloshed people on the planes?
Not
where are you flying
no.
to, man?
Dublin.
Oh, yeah.
People on bus
Scandinavia.
That's right.
But I think, okay, that may be right. I'm not seeing that statistic. But I think what alcohol does is if you've got somebody who's had a skinful, they're much more likely to take it to a higher level, maybe, you know, because they've lost that little sort of rational thing that most of us have. And therefore, people who are inebriated will take it higher faster, I think, because some of the worst air rage incidents have certainly involved alcohol.
So, guys, just to finish up, I thought I'd ask you maybe for a tip on how to stay calm in the air, how to keep that air frustration down and remain sanguine the whole time.
I think it's perspective. It's understand that if someone else is getting in your face about something, it's probably not about you. It's about whatever else happened that day. Mm-hmm. And it's that thing of the motto I have is choose your fights. Is this something I really want to take to the staff? Because that's what I will do if it is a problem. And it's like, do you want to take this to the staff, or is something worse potentially going to happen and you want to take that one to the staff? So choose the fight.
Yeah.
And for me, I use meditation apps.
Oh, yeah?
On my smartphone, yeah. And I find
Michael, you're so new age. That's impressive.
That's really cool, isn't it?
What is a meditation app?
Meditation apps. There are all kinds of meditation apps out there. If you just Google it, you'll find plenty.
Yeah.
There's one called Calm. There's another one called Headspace, which is with this guy who used to spent years being a Buddhist monk.
Wow.
So,
and they made the obvious transition into apps.
Well, it's a logical step.
Oh, Michael, first, I want to sit next to you on the next flight.
And meditation apps are great. They're very calming. You know, they'll play a little dolphin music in the background, a little bit of waterfall.
You know, that really irritates me.
That'll send you into air rage straight away. A little bit of flowing water music and, you know, a little bit of talk as well, about focusing on your breathing. And, you know, it just takes you into a different space, into a calmer, better place, you know. Oh. You listen to your better angels.
I like it.
I find that really, already.
Yeah, there you go. And I find that a better place to be.
Lovely. Well, mine is a little more lo-fi, but mine is just to approach the whole experience with the knowledge that there are going to be frustrations involved. It's the same as when you go to drive somewhere and you know the traffic's going to be bad. Getting upset about it doesn't make any difference. You just have to picture your destination, picture the reason why you're going on this trip, and the amazing experiences that you're going to have at the other side. And I think that helps to ease the whole thing through. Now, guys, we've come to the end. But I really appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you. It's been great to be here.
If you would like to read any more stories by Uta or Michael or myself, you can find them on traveller.com.au. And we'll see you next time on Flight of Fancy. And if you'd like to subscribe to the podcast, you can find us in iTunes or on your favourite podcasting app.